sign up for a volunteer shift. You're tuned into Pacifica Radio, kpft.org, twitter.com/kpft, facebook.com/kpft Houston.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
In missing geek formation, this is Technology Bites.
We actually have a transposed geek missing geek formation because we've got Barrett and Flicted down on the ground in Vegas scouting on the DEF CON hacking conference in Las Vegas, 20th anniversary of that, and Peter Hughes is in the studio with us, so it's going to sound a little different when we do our intro, I think. Yes, it will. Not quite. Welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Dwight.
And he's...
Groovehouse.
All right. I'm not hardly hearing anybody. Do you have his? Maybe I just need to turn mine.
I'm on this one.
Y'all, you guys are up.
Yes.
Everybody's up.
Yes.
They're all hot. They're all
Everybody's
on.
Hot.
They're hot.
Ooh, baby.
So hot.
All right. I'll just turn up my headphones. That'll make it better.
Yeah.
Ew. Welcome back, Dwight.
Hey, I'd say it's good to be back, but... You know.
What, are you having a Stones moment?
Yeah. No. No. Wait, what? Yes, I'm back. Hello. As I was vacating for the last 2 weeks, first in North Carolina, chilling on a lake with my sister and her husband, and then... Suddenly, I had to jet to Missouri because my daughter had to have surgery, and I was there holding her hand while she recouped for a few days. Then I jetted back to North Carolina just in time for my wife's aunt's funeral. So it was not exactly the most...
That doesn't sound like a vacation.
No. And we knew all this could happen when we started out. You know, the week coming up, we saw these things coming. We originally had this kind of idyllic vacation, first in a lake house.
And you saw the landmines.
Yes, and then we knew the landmines were there, and we did indeed step on them. My wife did get to, while I was in Missouri, did get to hang at the beach with her cousin. But it wasn't, I need a vacation for my vacation.
So despite everything, you're glad to be back.
I am glad to be back. I return to the offices of the mighty Houston Chronicle tomorrow. So
cool. Was it on purpose that the thing on you on the Houston Press showed up while you were out of town?
Well, he emailed that to me from out of town. I was trying like to not look at email that much, and I really didn't. But things caught my eye. He emailed me the questions. I just did them.
What happened? What was
the Jeff Balke at the Houston Press is doing this series called Know Your Local Media, and he's picking out people in the mainstream media in Houston. Okay. And he had done Eric Berger a while ago and wanted to do me, so he asked me like 5 or 6 questions, and I answered them by email, and this week.
Awesome.
Not in print, just on the web, which is where it counts, you know.
And he chose an awesome photo for the article.
Yes,
because I'm the keeper of the Dwight photo archive.
You take the best pictures of me. You also take some of the worst ones, but you do take the best pictures. Of me. That's just like a great photograph. I love that.
Was
picture.
That an approved photo? Did he get
it? Was Dwight contacted me, said that this was happening, and he got my permission and demanded a higher res version.
Yeah. What was the headline? The only social media expert over 25.
Yeah. There was this discussion on the web about a week or so ago about whether people who are social media managers all need to be under 25. Now, I'm well over 50.
You're
55.
Two social media managers.
Yeah. That's right. I guess you look at it that way. But I can see the argument for that.
I would say that you're probably an exception to the rule. You're more plugged in than the average 55-year-old.
Yes, I definitely am.
I see people probably our age that would struggle with trying to. I mean, do you see the? But even young people are going to struggle too if they're not plugged in. I don't think it has to do with the age. I think it has to do with how plugged in you are to the community. There was that Kit Kat debacle. Did you see that?
No, I missed the Kit Kat.
Kit Kat decided that Kit Kat was going to join Instagram and start using Instagram to promote. And the first photo they put out was a brown bear with 2 Kit Kat bars playing the drums. And it was Pedo Bear. Whoever was in charge of their social
didn't
media
know that.
Didn't know that that was Pedo Bear.
Must have been some 55-year-old dude.
But I would suspect that, you know, there's probably a good chance that young people are somewhat in tune with the, but I think it's marketing people. I think you're not a marketing person.
No, although, you know,
I think that's good for social media.
We hired at the Chronicle somebody who is doing social media on the business side and kind of coordinating our social media with branding, which is something that I had not been doing. And she is, you know, I don't think she's under 25, but she's in the vicinity. And she's very good at it. She's good, you know, at doing that and kind of picks out the things that I would necessarily miss. I think the benefit to having somebody who's got some experience doing social media, particularly somebody who has kind of been in the business for a while, is that you kind of know the history of it. You know the background and why some of these things have evolved the way they have evolved. You know that Facebook looks a lot like AOL and kind of how AOL succeeded and where it failed. And so you can look for those things inside of Facebook if you kind of have seen that history. And a lot of the people who are very young just aren't aware of that yet.
Well, I think there's also the component where, you know, it's been this way with technology for as long as I can remember. People that are passionate about technology and are good at it come along, you know, they innovate and they make things happen. But then other people who realize that there's money to be made in technology, they jump in and say, well, I could do that.
Right.
And we saw that all the time in the early days of consumer internet. We saw that in the early days of consumer internet access. So when I was at Neosoft, you know, the people that were getting online were the nerds and the geeks. And then all of a sudden, the marketers came, the people that said, I'm going to use this to make money.
And blogging, too. Blogging was the same way. Doing personal web pages was the same way. And, of course, social media is. There's now social media gurus out the wazoo, and that's where most of them belong.
Not out of the wazoo.
No.
Up the wazoo.
Yeah. So I don't know how you can't use age as a measuring stick. I don't think. Of course, I'm saying that as a person who's getting on in years.
Yeah, you can't use age as a measuring stick. We're hip. We're cool. We know what you kids like. We're like the cool dads who know what's going down.
That's cool, isn't it?
You kids and your raves and your food trucks and
oh, you foodies and bloggers and food bloggers. That's right. You Instagrammers.
And Pete, what did you bring in for dinner tonight?
He did not truck it.
I didn't have time. That's the problem. It's just sort of the...
If you're going to be judged on your hipness, you know, I mean, the younger Groovehouse proved that age might be a thing.
Let's see. Or the guy who lives around here and knows where everything is.
That's hardly an excuse if we're using age as a measuring stick.
And talking about social media.
And we look at Groovehouse with his food truck meal and you with your whatever that was.
Crummy fast food.
Yeah, your
horrible fast food.
Although I will say that while Groovehouse looked, you know, properly pretentious eating his food truck food, Pete looked like he was actually enjoying his meal. So there was that going for it.
Pete was inhaling his meal.
I had front row seats. I mean,
yeah,
I
was, you did.
Yeah.
A snarf fest.
So one other vacation related thing I wanted to bring up. My wife and I came across this excellent app for use on the road that I want to recommend if you're ever on a road trip, particularly if you have somebody who's with you doing the navigation, is this app called Road Ahead for the iPhone. I don't know if there's one for Android, but it's an app that shows you, looks at where you are on a freeway, and it really only works on the freeway, and then looks at the exits up ahead of you and shows you what food is around there.
I wish I'd known that. I wish I'd had that on my vacation.
Yes, it's awesome. And it will show you what's at those exits, but also in the area around those exits in town. So, yeah, you can find the Burger King and the McDonald's, and if you want Chick-fil-A, and you know that it's 4 miles up. But, for example,
can you say Chick-fil-A on our show?
Whatever.
Wag, the finger wags.
Mr. Social Media. Yeah.
Apparently you're not plugged in.
No, I am, but I love Chick-fil-A, and I feel really guilty when I eat it, but boy, is it good.
I'm glad that my cravings only come on Sundays.
Yeah.
So one of the things we did was we were going through Lafayette, and we wanted some Cajun food. And so we found this place about 2 or 3 miles inside Lafayette called the French Press Cafe, and we found it on Road Ahead. Road Ahead has links to the Yelp reviews and shows you the stars that Yelp gives any given restaurant. So you get stuff from locals commenting on these restaurants. We wound up there.
You could have found a food truck using this.
Yeah, I probably could have.
If I had had that here, I could have.
So, went to the French Press Cafe, had excellent oyster po' boys. They were delicious. It was in an old printing plant from apparently a defunct newspaper. And they even had a stack of hot type drawers is where the maitre d' greeted you and took you in. It was great. It was I wouldn't have found it without this app. So it's a free app. It's called the Road Ahead. There's a one similar to it called Road Ninja, which I had tried, and it kind of gets more publicity, but I don't think it's as good. But there may be a Road Ninja for Android. So if you can't find the Road Ahead, try Road Ninja.
That works. Well, in Logo Fails, you know, to go with the Kit Kat one. Since Pedo Bear's already been here, then I don't feel bad
bringing
this one up. Have you seen the logo for the London Olympics?
If I have, it didn't register.
If you look at it, do a search here. I will give you the search to do that will give you the what's wrong with this thing. Search for London Olympic logo Simpsons.
Now,
and you will see a picture. If they colorize, all they have to do is color it a little bit.
That's what they did. They colorized it to give it that look, but it is the logo, but it's colorized and has some features added to it.
It looks like Lisa Simpson doing something that only consenting adults might do and is illegal in several states with some other Simpsons character, I think would be the most delicate way.
The doctored image really shows that. But the actual logo have those colors.
You can't unsee it. I mean, you look at it, and it's Lisa Simpson immediately because of the jaggedy kind of Yeah, that one. That's pretty. Even without it, though,
GoFundMe.
Yeah, once you see that, you can definitely, that registers in your brain for now on that. That's what I'm going to see when I see that logo.
Is Lisa Simpson.
So yeah.
The only way they could have done worse is if Pedo Bear was in there somewhere because they got
close. I could probably alter that image and make that Pedo Bear.
I just want to know who came up with that font. I mean, that is straight 80s radical, you know, font.
Really?
Yeah, it looks like a shirt that should say radical from the 80s with a checkerboard behind it. I don't know.
Apparently they weren't. They were probably somebody in their 50s.
There you go. But some hip, cool guy who really knows his stuff.
The Olympic mascot's kind of frightening. It looks like Kodos and Kang and Kodos.
There seems to be a Simpsons theme to the Olympics then, I guess. Maybe that's the thing. Yeah, it's like if Kang and Kodos had a extended weekend with the Teletubbies.
Since you brought up the subject of the Olympics, I've been following, you know, the U.S. Olympic Committee has been really just assert. I mean, you know, this is difficult for me because I believe in asserting your copyright, but the United States Olympic Committee is so, they're hammering down. They own the word Olympic, and they just shut down they just made a restaurant, Olympic Gyro in New York, change their name. They've been around for 30 some odd years as Olympic Gyro, and they tried to shut down this or sent out a cease and desist letter to this group of knitters that were doing the knitting Olympics. And they said, well, you know, we don't, it's kind of tainting the name of the Olympics because, you know, it shouldn't be associated, implying that knitting was somehow denigrating the Olympics.
Yeah, really.
And then on top of that, all the
you know, people would get confused. I know track and field and knitting, I get.
And then the whole commercial sponsorship thing where they're not letting people carry food that is branded from anybody other than official sponsors. So, like, if you have a food product from your favorite restaurant or food truck. You have to dump it into another bag unless it's from, you know, one of these restaurants.
Did you hear the flap about the U.S. Olympic clothes?
Yeah, made in China.
Made in China. I believe it was Ralph Lauren, was it?
Lauren, or Lauren, however you say it. And also some of the, there's been some flap on the Olympics, too, because some of the teams with austerity measures in a lot of the European countries right now can't afford official Adidas brand logo uniforms, and so they've got counterfeit uniforms. They've got counterfeit Adidas logos that they've had made onto their uniforms. It's crazy.
Have you seen the Spain uniforms, the Olympic uniforms?
They were
Spain?
Made in...
I think it was some Russian firm designed them. No, they look like... You want fries with that? I mean, it looks like a fast food uniform from 20 years ago. It's like a Burger King. It looks like a Burger King.
I thought
uniform.
The United States official opening ceremonies uniforms that were made in China kind of look like a bad old Navy commercial.
When they were using the a cross between an old Navy commercial and the Bob, the Enzyte or whatever, the what's his secret kind of look.
Wow.
But we really look like Thurston Howell III went to old Navy for the entrance, so we're just going to really go push people around, I guess. But yeah, the Spain uniforms are like orange and yellow and have they look like fast food uniforms from about 20 or 30 years ago, which, since that's when I last worked in fast food, I am an expert. I can speak to that. But
God bless fast food.
And polyester uniforms.
God, you know, that were so incredibly soaked in grease that you weren't going to get away from them.
Wow.
They really look like
fast food uniforms. Wow.
I haven't seen them yet. Let's see.
Viva España.
Yeah. So,
speaking of Spain,
I mean, this only happens every 4 years. You'd think somebody that they could do better than that. You know, I guess it could have been worse. Instead of Ralph Lauren, we could have had American Apparel or something, and had this kind of vaguely
everything would have fit too tight.
Oh my God,
everything would have been too tight and real small and kind of vaguely erotic looking Olympic clothing or whatever.
I guess jocks never look cool. That is really horrifying.
You want fries with your empanada?
Well, you know what? These guys that are competing in the Olympics, they're in better shape than I am, and they're destined to make much more money than I ever will. They can, you know, yep. So
they can wear
if,
what they
if the
want.
Worst thing that ever happened to me is that I had to show up at the 2012 Olympics to compete in my sport in that outfit. If that was the worst thing that ever happened
to me. At
least
they provide it for you.
I'd be lucky if I could afford an outfit that stylish. All right.
The vitals.
Vitals. Oh, yeah. We haven't even talked about technology yet here. This is Technology Bites. We're glad you could tune in. We're, you know, obviously enjoying having Peter in the studio. It's a different dynamic altogether when you can look him in the eye and see how he's responding and that he wants to talk or he has something to say. And the conversation is a lot more lively in the studio tonight. But I want to let you know you can visit us online at kpft.org for the radio station or geekradio.com for the show specific website. We're also broadcasting via the stream online at kpft.org. You can hang out with us in IRC on irc.cuckoo.com in the channel Tech Bites. We also have an app on our website that lets you join the IRC right there. And the phone number is 713-526-5738. If you want to call in and be on the air, Groovehouse will have to do double duty, working the board and screening calls to be on the air. And Pete tells me that he has a short info shot.
I added a couple things.
We'll take it.
Yeah. All right. So we're going to take it away with the info shot. Take it away, info shot.
It's the Technology Bites info shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
Okay. First one. This is one of those where you sort of go, why didn't somebody come up with this one sooner than this? And why would it take a university? A company called Fusion.io and Princeton University recently announced a partnership in which the company would enable customers to use flash memory, like an SSD drive, as an extension of DRAM, which, you know, that you've got the lot faster I.O., you know, input-output, as opposed to virtual memory on a regular hard drive. Their thing, though, takes – part of the thing that's new about their technology is basically, it takes out some of the things that are used when the drive is acting as a hard drive. The software they created is called SSD ALLOC or SSD ALLOC. Turns flash memory into an entity that can behave more like traditional RAM and not like storage memory, which removes a bottleneck that's present when a program switches from DRAM to storage memory. According to the researchers, SSD ALLOC allows developers to bypass the traditional system of searching for information in storage memory and moves flash memory up in the internal hierarchy of computer data. Instead of thinking of flash as a version of a storage drive, SSD ALLOC tells the computer to consider it as a larger, somewhat slower version of RAM. The benefit of this approach is that the software does not require changes to the program. If you were using RAM and you want to use RAM, you can do that. If you want to use solid state, you can use that, said Anirudh Badam, a graduate student who was part of the development team. You know, it makes sense. I mean, it's quick, and apparently they came up with a couple of obstacles. They found a couple of obstacles that if they change how it behaves, then you get a big advantage. But it sounds like there may be speed gains. You know, I use a MacBook Air that's got a solid-state drive, and obviously it goes very quickly because of it. And I'm sure it's using some of that as virtual memory. But
so how is this different from Ready Boost in Windows 7 and Vista?
I would assume that it's that they're using it as if it's just like virtual memory on the hard drive where it's doing swaps and things like that, as opposed to it sounds like this allows it to treat it more like it's just a bit slower RAM, as opposed to the things they do to keep up with, you know, I/O that you have to go right to the drive, you have to write on the drive and read off it and that kind of stuff. So, you know, again, it's one where it seems like somebody would have thought of that one sooner, as opposed to it just being, oh, it's just really fast. It's just a really fast, RAM disk kind of thing. Anyway, so like you said, it's one of those where, you know, they've obviously done the work and made the software. So, kudos to them on that. The big thing in Apple news today that's out is, of course, Mountain Lion came out. And, you know, I know I downloaded it and installed it, and that went fairly painlessly. And we can talk more about it during the show. But that is out there. It's $20. You know, they seem to be now on a path where they're going to have a system update every, or, you know, a new system every year, which may just be, that may be a nice little way for Apple to make some more cash for, but it does seem to be a big enough, it does seem like they did enough things with it that it actually is a legitimate, you know, full update. And then got a few Apple-y rumors. What would our show be without Apple rumors? There is this analyst. What's his name? It was the same guy. Had two different things. He says that there's going to be a 13-inch Retina display MacBook Pro, and an updated iMac this fall. The guy's name is Ming-Chi Kuo. Says, like I said, that'll be an iMac refresh. That's a new rumor. And that the deal, the problem though with a 13-inch MacBook Pro with Retina display would be that demand would outweigh supply. Also, I just wonder though, what would the price of such a thing be? Would that push? It'd be a tough decision between a, say, 13-inch Retina display and a full-on, fairly loaded 15-inch non-Retina display, because the pricing, I would assume, would be a similar kind of jump, that sort of $300 or $400. But supposedly they're going to do, you know, I guess the Retina thing is, the idea is that that's going to be a fairly big trend with Apple. The other thing the same analyst came up with is, I don't know, rumoring it, does that count as confirming it? Allegedly, the iPad mini could see the light of day before the end of September. I guess that would be the biggest piece to it. Because, yeah, there's been people talking about, you know, a 7-inch iPad or whatever, but saying that it would be in late September is something new. I guess since it wouldn't really require a new operating system or any of that, then that would mean that they would come out with it and it would be available just in time for Christmas. So that makes more sense than if they waited until next spring, when the cycle would be in for the, for a new iPad to come out. And then another odd side effect with this new operating system is there was an update to Safari. And the thing that's really weird is the Mac version of Safari that revved. They've got a new rev on that makes it behave more like Safari does on an iPad. But on the Windows side, crickets. They didn't do any changes. And so they actually took off the mentions of the Windows Safari page, but you still apparently can get Safari for Windows. Let's see, where was it? Previously, the Apple support download pages had previously summarized all available Mac and Windows versions and provided a link to the general download page, but now Apple has Safari for Windows on a dedicated page linking directly to the download.
And it's the older version.
And it's Safari for Windows 5.1.7, which was released alongside OS 10.7.4 in early May. You know, that wasn't that long ago, so it may just be that they didn't need those features. Those features weren't going to show up in the Windows one anyway. But, there's an update to the article. Apple's pulled the standalone Safari 5.1.7 for Windows download page, redirecting visitors to the previous version that links to the now discontinued general Safari download page. So now it looks like Safari for Windows is not directly linked anywhere at Apple. And finally, on new stuff, this is one that's coming, but fortunately, the when it's coming actually makes sense and is, like, not too bad a wait. Broadcom has announced its triple-speed 5G Wi-Fi for mobiles and said that it's going to come out in early 2013. Maybe 5G Wi-Fi doesn't mean anything to you. 802.11ac. is the one that's got better range, it's faster, all of that stuff. And so now Broadcom is given a firm date of the first quarter of 2013 for its mobile chip. The add-on belongs to the mainstream line of 40-nanometer combo radios that handle Wi-Fi, including regular 2.4 gigahertz, 5 gigahertz, Bluetooth 4.0, and FM even, which means there's every likelihood it'll appear in numerous smartphones and tablets soon after production starts. Broadcom promises tripled transfer speeds, dramatically improved range, and 6 times greater power efficiency compared to wireless N, which everybody else is promising that too. The interesting thing with this one is it sounds like early next year. So I would suggest, just depending, you know, unless you're just a real, you know, unless you're just a bargain hunter, if you're kind of into your home Wi-Fi and wanting it to be fairly quick and all that, if it starts getting to this fall, I would suggest thinking twice about getting a new Wi-Fi router unless you have to, because it just sounds like this new, the 802.11ac stuff is going to have a lot of really positive, really big, you know, I've noticed a difference between 802.11g and N. I mean, you can tell a difference in some circumstances, but it sounds like this particular jump is going to be one where it's going to be very noticeable. You're going to really be able to tell the difference in the kind of speeds you're getting, as opposed to some of these earlier versions of Wi-Fi where, you know, from one to the other. I'm sure if you had to go back, if you went back to like 802.11, you know, the early stuff that you first had, you'd probably really notice the difference, but each upgrade hasn't been particularly dramatic compared to the other ones, where this one promises to. And that's the news.
All right. Wow. So dog and doorbell free.
There you go. There you go.
I couldn't let the sleeping dog lie, so to speak.
Way to peg out those meters.
Yeah. way to blow my speakers, dude. All right. Well, we Dwight's the sound effect king, apparently.
Wrong radio show, Dwight.
Welcome to the Spike Lee Show.
It's a Prairie Home Technology Companion.
All right. So I was, you know, it was weird having the news because we could just turn it down and, you know,
walk out of the studio.
Talk amongst ourselves. But were you talking about in September is possibly the release date for the new iPhone?
iPad 7. No, iPad 7? The 7-inch.
7-inch.
Yeah.
Ah.
That's what this particular analyst was saying. You know, of course, I guess somebody needs to assemble the whole list of predictions so that then you can figure out who was really actually right. I mean, there's been a little bit of that, because sometimes when they announce a story and they have the rumor, then they'll say, you know, This outlet has been correct about this particular thing before, where the rest of them, it's like, you know, some guy's name, I don't know who he is. He just, his deal was enough that investors were looking at it, and it got written up in a couple of different, CNET picked it up, and another outlet besides them picked it up. So I figured it was worth throwing the rumors out there, spreading them around.
I'm a big fan of rumors.
We need to make up our own. Oh, you know, in Siri, in the new iPhone, I think you get to see Siri. And she'll follow, like, visual commands.
It turns out like that Siri's connect. Max headroom.
Max.
All right. So 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air tonight. If you'd like to call into a studio that is populated with Peter and unpopulated with Flicked and Barrett.
Yeah, so the average age in the studio has gone up dramatically by taking two of the younger members of the team and substituting somebody from the upper middle, I guess I would say.
All right, 713-526-KPFT if you want to be on the air with us this evening. I follow the iPhone rumors. If you try to Google search iPhone rumors, there's, you know, everybody's just amalgamating or grabbing up everybody else's rumors, and it's so convoluted. But that apparently is a thing to, like, you know.
It goes back a long time. I mean, when I think about it, with doing the show and having the news and all that stuff, there was that kind of rumor stuff was going all the way back to in the mid 90s. you know, before Apple kind of created that, though, because, like, I remember when they had when they released the Mac 2 FX, which, boy, that dates a person. that was just like out of nowhere, and suddenly there was this, for the time, dramatically faster machine, and nobody had suspected, nobody had even speculated about them doing it, and then suddenly, boom, they announce it. And so I think people got into where it's like they were so surprised that then they started trying to anticipate what was the surprise.
Right.
And then you get the internet, and a few people got lucky. You know, Mac Rumors, that used to be just some guys, like some kid. You know, that was the funny part. So you'd follow this site, and, you know, they'd have all these rumors and all this information, and you find out, you know, that they're like seven. It's a 17-year-old who's doing this in his spare time, literally in his parents' basement.
Didn't Dig just get sold as well?
Yes,
for a bargain basement price, yes. For $500,000.
Yes, I can't remember who exactly bought them. Probably a little googling would find it, but
that's it. $500,000.
Yeah. I know.
It was, well, no, that was that was the rumored price, but later there were statements to the fact that that was kind of like a cash price, but there were other considerations involved as well.
Players to be named later,
right?
So, or that they actually paid $400,000, and the thing to be named later is the fact that they didn't even pay the $500,000. I don't know. You know, that they would hide the actual price.
$500,000.
It was bought by BetaWorks.
So it's back to beta for Dig. Huh?
Yeah, so they're going to completely redo it.
Wow.
Wow, and then when they're done, they can call it Reddit. Sorry.
It was $500,000 in Facebook stock.
No, in credits, so that they can use them on any Zynga game they want.
All right, 713-526-5738. All the lines are currently open.
We're talking technology.
We're talking technology and Olympics and logo fails. Whatever you like. So, you know, obviously I've already checked out because I'm ready to go to Vegas. I'm ready to go.
Bags are packed.
Mostly packed. I am going to 713-526-5738 if you want to stop this conversation. But I am I'm thinking I'm going to only take, I'm taking one Zoom, 16 okay. to 50, and everything else is Prime.
There you go.
So I've been to Vegas enough times. I know what to expect when I get there and what I'm going to see. So I just thought, you know, I'm going to do an experiment where I limit myself to only Prime lenses and ultra fast primes. To try to figure out a new way to shoot Vegas and a new way to photograph even DEF CON. DEF CON should be interesting because
a lot of people don't want their picture taken.
That's right. And you have to.
You're going to get a lot of hands, a lot of paperwork.
It's
things
like
that
taking pictures
down.
At Afflicted Convention.
713-526-5738 is the number to call if you want to be on the air. I'm pretty excited about the VIP speaker that's going to be at DEF CON, and I have to look up his name again, but he is the director for the NSA.
Well, and Apple is going to have a presence at DEF CON as well. They're going to have somebody on one of the panels, which is like, first of all, for them to attend a conference is pretty amazing, and that it would be DEF CON.
I've heard they're giving out free Red Bulls if you promise not to hack them in the future.
Maybe they want to throw a bunch of Apple products into a hacker-rich environment and just see what happens to them. It's General Keith B. Alexander, Director of the National Security Agency and Commander of U.S. Cybercom. So I'm sure that'll be the most well-attended speaker there. All right, well, the phones are not ringing. Yay. 713-526-573. Of course, the music lineup is looking really good, too. There's going to, Crystal Method is going to be playing at the main party, but also Whitey Cracker and Frontalot.
MC Frontalot.
MC Frontalot is going to be there.
Seen on Technology Bites.
As seen on Technology Bites. That's right. Barrett is in his film.
Yes, he is. I got a screen cap of that.
You need to share that with the world.
You got it.
All right. 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with Technology Bites. I'm assuming the phones work.
Call it up.
Let's call and see what happens. Maybe our phones are down.
Oh, no.
That would be horrible. We were off the air for an hour last week.
Yeah, I saw a reference to that.
At least I know coming Twitter. In, I was listening to KPFT on my car stereo on the radio, so I know we are broadcasting.
Is that you calling?
Yeah.
No, it's not me calling. I didn't actually have a chance to dial. Barry just texted me from DEF CON saying, bring your old badges. And I was like, oh, no. Why? So my old badges are at the office from last year. I only have last year's badges, but I don't need no stinking badges. Haha, I went there. Yes, I did. 713-526-573. All right, good. A couple of calls coming in, and Groovehouse is screening those right now. So
how do we want to, let's see, there's no Barrett here, yeah, so how do we want to handle is, the...
Well, Groovehouse usually brings them on the air, and then
you can
Barrett
hang them up.
Barrett hits the drop button when they're done. But
or just slightly before. Should I do
that?
Oh,
yeah. You have to do it right. You have to do it right before.
When they start to say bye, then you...
All right, so Groovehouse.
Yes?
Who do we have up first?
All right, up first on the show, we're going to take Neil.
Neil, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
Good. Hey, real simple question. What do you guys think is a good password manager I should use? I used to use an Access database on my Windows PC, and I just switched over to a Mac, so I gotta start using some kind of password manager, I thought.
We've talked in the last couple of weeks about password managers and 1Password.
1Password. I use 1Password and love it. There's a Windows version and a Mac version, and one of the nice things about 1Password is that you can store the data file that actually has your passwords on Dropbox, so you can point any version at that data file and keep it synced between all your various computers.
Is this mostly for like websites and stuff that you're talking about, or is it for other kinds of things?
It's mostly for websites. And I was just thinking, one of the nice things would be if I could get to it via, you know, it's all Mac at home. So the iPhone, the iMac, and then the MacBook.
Because a lot of it, unless you're talking about like secure, like bank type sites, if you're the only one that's using your machine and that, then Mac is pretty good about saving the passwords. You know, if you let it, it saves the passwords, and I have not heard anything about that being insecure. I mean, it puts them on the keychains.
Yeah.
And they're not plain text.
The thing I didn't like is like, if I'm not at that computer, you know, let's say, like, I'm on the road, and all of a sudden I've got to get a password to, you know, my credit card site or something.
True. Is that one, are they going to where your keychains, I'm asking Dwight, so you know I'm not asking you, mm-hmm. on your keychains, are they starting to sync that up over the cloud for your accounts?
I don't think so. I've not seen any indication.
I wouldn't be surprised if that didn't come along, though.
Yeah, I haven't seen that indication yet.
Does 1Pass do that?
1Pass will sync over, as I said, with Dropbox.
Okay.
Or rather, 1Password.
1Password?
Yeah, we'll sync with Dropbox.
Okay, I'll give that one a try.
All right, well, thanks for your call.
Thanks.
And there you go.
There, yep, so we dropped him.
Pizza.
But you didn't drop him fast enough. He got in his bye completely.
He was able to sign off properly.
That's right.
Also, you have to be aware of the hand signals for, like, you know... all right. No, the Rush Limbaugh. All right, 713-526-573. I have 2 calls in the queue, plenty of open lines, and about 15 minutes left in the first half of the show before we have to take a station break. Groovehouse?
Yes.
Who do we have up next?
All right, up next, we're going to take Tyra.
Tyra, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hi, guys. Thanks so much. I have a question about LinkedIn and Outlook jamming up, and I sent an email to Jay. He was really kind today. So I get an email notice that somebody has made a LinkedIn connection request, and I have the view pane, and I just click accept in the view pane with Outlook open.
Right.
And, you know, these requests are coming from people I already know. So, you know, at least, you know, I know the name of the person to be a real person. And I assume it to be legitimate. But then when I click accept, something, it gets hung up. And it kind of never goes over into LinkedIn. So I minimize my Outlook because this thing is jammed up. And today I did that. I minimized Outlook, and then I could never open Outlook again. It said something about a dialog box is open, close it, but you couldn't see the dialog box. You just couldn't go any place. It was just minimized down there in the bottom. You couldn't click on it, open it. You couldn't open another version of Outlook. So it was just jammed up all day long. And finally, I started and restarted my, you know, turned the computer on and off a few times and was finally able to get it unhung up.
Weird. Now, I have not.
Now, what about when you click on links, other kind of links in the emails? Like if somebody sends you a link to a website and it has just the URL there in the email and you click that, does that open up your browser and show you the web page?
It does. I mean, sometimes they move a little slow, and I've recently gotten Mozilla Firefox as my new default browser for all the links off of Outlook. But, you know, it's a little bit slow, but it doesn't get stuck. So those will go through. But these invites on LinkedIn just...
Well, it does require, when you click on an accept link inside of a LinkedIn email, it's supposed to bring you to a specific website or page within the LinkedIn site, and it checks to see if you are logged in, if it's already got your username and password, if you're already signed into the site, and then it allows you to accept the LinkedIn request. If you're not signed in, it should bring you up to a login page and so forth. The concern I have is that, you know, if these are indeed, you know, and you say that they're legitimate LinkedIn requests, have you tried just opening up a browser and going to LinkedIn and signing in to see if those requests are actually there?
No, I haven't tried that. That's a good suggestion.
I would say make sure. I've had a couple of fake LinkedIn requests come across, and I didn't recognize the names, and I was suspicious right off the bat. But the links, the accept link, actually takes you, or tries to take you, to a fraudulent web page. So if you hover over that accept link in your Outlook mail, also you can look down at the bottom of Outlook and see if that's resolving to a LinkedIn address or to something else. Because my worry is that you might have gotten hit with something that's not LinkedIn.
There's a lot of LinkedIn spam out there.
I would be very, because of exactly what happened to you, which is clearly is LinkedIn, they've had their databases have been compromised a few times, so they have lists of legitimate
LinkedIn users, yeah.
And so they send you that, and people tend to, I think, just click the accept. Oh, well, that's Bob, I'll click it. And that, because you don't think about it, the thing I would suggest is, just like Jay said, you need to pay close attention. When you get a link in an email, even if you think it's legit, if it's about money at all, I go to the website of the, say, bank or PayPal or whatever, and type it in and go to their message center
rather than hitting a link
to see if whatever it is was really legit.
Now, that being said, if the problem you're having, when you're like just browsing the web, does everything seem to be working okay?
Yes, it is. And, you know, I have Windows XP, but it's version 2003. So, I mean, it's probably getting time to get an upgrade. And I did do a little bit of searching on the Microsoft support website today, and they kind of talked about this problem with Microsoft 2000, and they talked about a Service Pack 3. So I downloaded Service Pack 3. I have no idea what that does.
Well, XP has a number of service packs that they've got all the way up to Service Pack 3, which have a lot of bug fixes and security patches and so forth for the operating system. If your operating system is not patched with all the security updates, and you can determine that by simply opening up Internet Explorer and going, since it's XP, you can go to windowsupdate.microsoft.com, and it will scan your system to tell you if you're up to date on all your system patches.
Yeah.
So I would do that. If you haven't been patching your system on a regular basis, that begs the question, do you run an antivirus program on your computer?
I do. I have a Trend Microsoft.
Trend Micro, okay.
Trend Micro, right, yeah.
And have you ever scanned your system for potential spyware using something like Malwarebytes or Spybot Search and Destroy?
No, I just use the Trend, whatever Trend does.
I would recommend that you go ahead and maybe scan your system using a dedicated anti-spyware tool. And there, and Malwarebytes is free. So if you go to malwarebytes.com, you can download a copy of their program. And let it go ahead and check your system out. And it'll scan through. If it detects anything, it'll give you the option to remove it. And I would say, you know, just remove whatever it finds. But antivirus programs don't always detect spyware. In fact, they're very bad at it. So you may have a spyware issue going on and not know it, and Trend Micro would never see it.
Interesting. Okay.
If you go to geekradio.com and click on the spywares link, I talk about spyware and the behaviors, you know, the symptoms of spyware, and list links to the free tools to check your computer out. But some of the stuff you're describing sounds like you might have gotten hit with something.
Okay.
All right.
I'll do that. Yeah. Thank you so much, guys. That's very helpful. Thanks.
All right. Thanks for your call. Have a good night.
You too.
Bye-bye. All right. Okay, good. I don't have to answer her last email. She was following up. All right, so we got about
8 minutes.
8 minutes left. 713-526-5738. We've got two calls in the queue, so if you call in now, we can get you lined up for the second hour of the show if you'd like to be a part of that. We're not going to have a Barrett time, so we'll be going right into the calls after the top of the hour. But before that, who's up next?
Up next, we're going to take Zoe.
Zoe, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey guys, thanks for taking my call. I had a question about how to figure out a password for an Excel document that has been password protected. So essentially, we've forgotten the password, and I'm just wondering if there is a way, other than actually buying software to kind of unlock the password, if there's a way that we can...
I don't know of a way to do it for free. The good news is that Excel's passwords are not terribly complex or secure in reality, and there are a number of tools that will open those right up for you. But you're going to probably have to buy a program to do it. Let me see if I could see if there's any free ones out there. No, Office Password Recovery Utility. I think if you download the tool, it'll tell you whether it can, it'll show you like the first three characters of the password. And then you can guess it from there if you're the one that set the password and you don't have to pay for it. But, let's see. No, there is a free utility.
Is this Excel 2007?
It's 2010.
It's
2010. Let's see. If you've forgotten a simple password for Word or Excel, this free utility is a good way to recover it. Free Word Excel Password Wizard is very limited set of attacks. However, a free demo fulfilled.
Here's one way I found. If you do a Google search on hack Excel worksheet, apparently if you change the make a backup of the file so that you're working on a copy.
Right. No, I was going to use a dummy.
Change the file extension to zip, and then extract it, and then you find workbook.xml and what it extracts out, and then they tell you where to go. There's a place where there's a lock structure workbook protection line, and if you take that out, and change the thing back to XLSX, then it'll open up.
How'd you
unlocked.
Find that? Those instructions.
Google.
Google. But like, what was the Google search term? So, or either that, or read the URL to the.
Yeah, it was hack. Hack Excel workbook or something like that. Datapigtechnologies.com. It was the first one on mine when.
Right. So he, by doing that search on using those terms, he was able to find a page that talks, it has some step by step stuff you can go through that looks like it would be free and like it might actually work.
Okay.
But depending on how important the data is to you, I think the tool
that's very
is probably.
Important.
Huh?
Yeah, it's pretty important.
Then a $30 investment in a piece of software to just do this and be done with it might be the way to go.
Although just copying it and trying it, and if it doesn't work, then you can go to the other either. And of course, the only reason we're telling you any of this stuff is because it's your document, and you have a legitimate reason to be getting into
and
it.
Let us use this as an opportunity to point out that password protection inside of Excel or inside of Office is not very secure. So if you're using that to protect like an Excel spreadsheet full of passwords, you're probably not doing a very smart thing.
Okay. No, not me.
No. I just in general for our listeners say we're going to be calling in and accusing us of being hackers.
Okay.
All right. All right.
Well, thank you guys so much. I appreciate it. I'll try that. Thank you.
Thanks for your call. Yeah. So, one time when I had a helpline column somebody had written in, and I mean, it was legit. I emailed back and forth with this person who'd written in, and they had a computer that belonged to their son who was in a coma. And they needed to get into the computer to get access to some documents, and it was password protected. And so I said, if you look around on the internet, you're going to find this anyway. But I said, in my article, I said, I don't like to give out information on how to break into systems, but I do recognize that there are situations where it is actually, you need to be able to do this. And it's already out on the internet. And so I wrote this article and I said, here's how you do it. And somebody wrote me, says, tore me a new one for teaching people how to hack. My stuff isn't secure. But if it can be shared,
if you can with a 3-word search on Google, you can find it, kind of thing. It's not exactly a state secret.
But I think it also points out the importance of understanding how security works and how to actually protect your data. Is a good conversation. We've had the last couple of shows. We've been talking about strong passwords and things like that. And it's been a good conversation to have. All right, so what do we got? We got a few minutes still. We got a break at 2 minutes before the hour.
At 58.
So we got 2.5 minutes we got to fill. I don't think we want to take another call on the air, but
if you're on hold, hang tight because we will be
coming right back.
We have a whole another hour we can fill with your calls
on IRC. Kojo's telling me. To don't tell her she's trying to be elite hacks work.
Yeah, you could tell. Because that's the way most of them got started, right? Was calling into a radio show in public.
I don't know. Tracer I'm T.
I cast magic missile. All right, well, if you do want to be on the show in the second half of the hour, we do have two calls on hold that are going to be coming up in the second hour, but we got lots of open lines at 713-526-5738. So you can call, and this is a really good time to get in the queue to be on the air with us.
Because that abuse afflicted isn't here. It's a little known secret.
Abusive?
Since he's not here, then we can talk about it without falling under his wrath. When you think that it's Angry Jay, that's not real. That's just Flicted impersonating him. He just turns down the mic and starts shouting into the microphone.
That's why Flicted always covers his face in photos, is to hide the actual Harry Potter vein that he has. All right, so... Wow, even that didn't fill up enough time. This whole trying to end on the top, the hour of the bottom, that's what people in professional radio do.
Right.
And why do we care about ending on
the to because we have the breaks for our syndication.
Oh. Yes.
So we break it, and they break it.
So speaking of which. To appease the Californians.
And apparently some other radio stations
now. Yeah, speaking of which.
I need to look that up, but I did get an email indicating that we are now being carried probably on at least 3 more radio stations.
Wow.
So
several states may be hearing about us.
Huh? Maybe listening to us struggle as we try to break into the, the whole breakdown at the bottom of the top of the hour type radio, which we're not used to doing. Being in public radio and commercial free radio, you usually just have free reign to just keep going and going until your show's over, and then you kind of have a chat with the show that's coming on. But, we haven't tried to professional it up. All right. Well, you're listening to Technology Bites, as professional as it gets here. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Dwight.
And he's
Groovehouse.
And we'll be right back after these messages.
You got it. These messages right here.
More.
Oh, wrong message.
On Saturday, August 4th, beloved Texas musical group The Flatlanders will return to the Crichton Theater in downtown Conroe for one performance only. This year, The Flatlanders, featuring legendary Texas singer-songwriters Joe Ely, Jimmy Dale Gilmore, and Butch Hancock, celebrate their 40th anniversary with The Odessa Tapes, a collection of recordings made in 1972 and never before released to the public. During this very special performance in Conroe, The Flatlanders will preview songs from the new CD and will also have a limited number of pre-release tour copies of the CD available only at the concert. Folk Family Revival will open the show at 8 o'clock on August 4th at the Crichton Theater, located at 234 Main Street in downtown Conroe. Tickets for The Flatlanders and Folk Family Revival are now on sale at crichtontheater.org or call 9- 936-441-7469, extension 201. Presented by the Friends of Conroe, a nonprofit organization, and KPFT Houston.
XXVI will be here on July 28th. XXVI will not wash your car while you drive it home from work. XXVI will make whatever you're wearing look better only because you wore it there. Yes, friends. XXVI is the event you cannot miss. XXVI is where it's at. The cold watermelon, the parade of musical acts, the hula hoops and the sand to dance in. XXVI is the 26th annual Watermelon Dance and Summer Social. And it all takes place on July 28th at the Last Concert Cafe, 1403 Nann Street, just off the Hardy McKee exit on I-10. Music performed by Jimmy Lee Dean Band, The Hightailers, Pot Roast, Drum, Fallen Folk, Charity Johns, and from Dallas, Premium Blend, Belly Dancing by the Tribal Lilies. The door fee is $15 or $20, you decide which. So save the date, July 28th, and remember that dancing with one hand on your watermelon is always acceptable at this event. Supporting Community Radio 90.1 is as easy as XXVI. See you there. Brought to you by KPFT, The Last Concert Cafe, and Watermelon, the other red meat. 90.1 KPFT.
More opportunities to get out in the Houston heat and melt. Yeah.
Although I got to tell you, it is not as bad here as it was in Missouri. Up there in the America's breadbasket in Missouri, Iowa, Illinois, they're having the drought this year that we had last year.
And it's actually having a greater impact because they actually grow our food
right
up there.
It looks, but you know, remember how last year it looked, everything was brown and crunchy and things were, that's the way it looks up there now.
So I'm glad I took my vacation in June because it was all green, all all the way up through mid-America. It was right. All
it is
nice
not
and green
now.
And now it is toast.
On the day after my daughter's surgery, and we were kind of, you know, it was outpatient surgery, so we kind of she stayed with me in the hotel room and just kind of chilled for a day.
Welcome back to Technology Bites.
It was 104 degrees, and I was having like flashbacks to last year. You know, it's bad news.
90.1 FM, KPFT.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Houston. We don't actually have to do station IDs because that happens in the promos.
The promo, yeah.
And then when we're being broadcast on radio stations that aren't KPFT, they don't get all the mess.
That's right.
So you watch yourself kinda, there, boy. Yeah.
Got it.
All right. So 713-526-5738. We did lose one of our calls in the queue.
But we've got plenty of open lines for more.
We do have plenty of open lines for more.
713-526-5738.
713-526-KPFT. So we've got the one in the queue. We're going to deal with that now. So okay. Who is it and what do they want?
All right. Up next on the second half of the show, we're going to take Terry.
Terry, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, guys. A while ago when I was driving home, you seemed so lonely.
I would say we didn't don't need your pity calls, but yeah, we do.
Yeah, well, okay. Okay, it's been nice talking to you. Have a good night.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Have a good evening.
Yeah, right. Well, okay, real quick. This is an issue regarding Microsoft Publisher 2007 version that has to do with the drop-down menu file print command reflecting a lost communication message to the printer. Okay, does that make sense? We're running XP, Service Pack 3, all the updates are current. System is functioning normally otherwise. A particular administrative assistant that runs the system depends upon Publisher a lot and recently has not been able to print to, it's one of these Sharp intelligent network printers.
Summarize what you're trying to ask here? So you have Microsoft Publisher.
Yeah.
Somebody uses it all the time. And what is the problem that she's having?
Yeah, as I said in the first statement, there is no communication. The program says that it can't communicate with the printer. So
okay, can other programs print?
Other programs can print.
Did it ever print or did it quit?
When did it quit? We broke up for a second.
Now, did it ever work? Did Publisher used to be able to print okay to this printer?
It did before.
Right. Well, typically when you use a program like whether it's Publisher or Word or Outlook or Internet Explorer or whatever, they interface with the operating system to be able to access the printer. So if one program prints, they should all print. So it's unusual to have a situation where
a program like Publisher won't print. So there's two options that you're going to have to troubleshoot this situation. The first one is going to be just try reinstalling the printer. You know,
have done that and reinstalled the program as well.
Okay, you uninstalled and reinstalled the program. So when you try to print, when you click on File and then Print, and you try to print the document, what exactly happens?
You have a grayed out dialog box in the normal file print screen that gives the options for properties and all that kind of jazz. It's grayed out, and eventually it times out and gives a message that says that the publisher cannot communicate with the printer. Now, oddly, you can go to the little print icon at the top of the screen, and 9 out of 10 times print just lickety-split from that icon.
Hmm.
Yeah, that's weird. I know.
And it's a Canon printer?
No, it's a Sharp. It's one of these copier network printers.
Is it a network printer?
Yes.
So you're not connected with the computer itself, does not connect directly to the printer. It connects over the network and then to the printer.
That is correct. And all of the users can print to that thing easily.
And what's the operating system on the computer that's having a problem?
XP Service Pack 3.
Are you using any kind of firewall or internet security software on that computer?
Other than McAfee Antivirus, no.
Okay.
Yeah, I know.
Have you tried removing the printer and then refinding it on the network?
Have uninstalled the printer and reinstalled it.
And reinstalled it from the network. In other words, use the network finder and refound it.
Yes, exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't use like an application to communicate with the network printer? I mean, you're connected directly through add remove printers and XP.
Exactly. And it uses a TCP/IP port. On an LPT, or you know, it's really bizarre. I did get a little success in dealing with a Windows Spooler subsystem. Found in the knowledge base a comment about cleaning that out. Did that, and it seemed to help a bit. But printing with that icon at the top is functional, but going to file print, nope, can't do it.
What I would suggest that you might try that would be worth an experiment to do is to try creating a new user on the computer and logging and setting that user as an administrator and then log out of the user that's using it currently and log into that new user account, fire up Publisher, and see what happens.
Okay. Give that a shot.
It's an unusual one. I've not seen where you would have. Like,
how about deleting the user profile?
Sorry, say that again?
How about deleting the user profile?
Well, if you want to do that, you can, but by creating a new user profile to see if it's going to solve the problem first, then you can transfer the files over from the other user old user profile and then delete it if you care to. But deleting it is going to delete everything that they have, like in their My Documents folder, their favorites, and so forth. So that's why I was recommending building a new user profile.
No, I agree. All right. Okay, well, I'll give that a shot and see.
All right.
It's just really bizarre. I appreciate the advice.
All right. Well, good luck. Thanks for your call.
Thanks, guys. Bye.
All right. So according to Otis Hardy McClay, we are now broadcasting on KBOO in Portland, Oregon.
All right.
K-Boo. That's awesome.
I think that's pretty cool. We're also broadcasting on WGXC in Greene County, New York, right north of New Jersey, west of the Hudson.
So we're heard coast to coast.
Coast to coast.
with the minimum number of stations you
and
possibly can
considering
do.
Houston, coast to coast to coast.
All coast.
Tri-coastal.
Tri-coastal.
All right. And we're also... broadcasting on The Detour, which is internet only out of Nashville.
Excellent.
And, of course, KKRN, the first one that picked us up out in Bella Vista, California.
I have a friend out in Portland. Maybe he'll hear me. Yeah. Actually, I ought to, you'd be interested in some of his stuff. He does, like, Cthulhu Film Festival.
And that happens in Portland, doesn't it?
The Cthulhu, in Portland, and they had it in Austin for a while. Mm. This guy, just, you know, whatever happened to him? So I Googled his name, and then I find he's doing
David
all
Harold
this,
goes out to the Cthulhu Film Fest.
That he runs it.
He runs it.
He put it on, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, his name is Andrew. I won't give out his last name.
All right, Andrew. If you're listening, Eric, we'd like to get the hookup.
Get some free tickets.
Get some free tickets and airfare.
Throw in a hotel, too. Why not?
Well, but we can promote it so it'll be on the radio in Portland at whatever.
Payola, we're asking for it.
2 o'clock in the morning.
The new rules: protect equipment, no price mentions, no ringing phones. What? Keep a safe space. No electioneering. No commercialism.
No price mentions. Well, that one does.
Only if we're actually making money. I think if the price mentions are, you know, you're really not supposed to talk about how much something costs. But especially if you're involved in promoting it. All right.
But so if we're,
we can say that it costs you no dollars to come to the Geek Gathering a week from Friday.
There you go. I guess maybe we need to get some clarification. It's kind of like, it doesn't seem to me to be relevant if we're not selling it and we get no benefit from it. You know,
well, that
like
the context,
I mentioned, that the operating.
I think it has to do with the context, but
you can't say that like Mountain Lion is only $20. You can't say that. Is that the idea?
I think that might be the idea.
So that's two of the three of us have violated the rule.
So you're out. You're out. You're out.
He's right out. Well, you know, I think that I think actually the context is the idea is promotion. We're not promoting Apple. Well, maybe you are, Pete, but you know, we're not like promoting it. We don't work for Apple. We don't get any benefit from it.
Well,
and it's a service.
I don't know that we should necessarily be debating this. If it's a rule, it's a rule, and we need to abide by it.
No, I guess the thing was just sort of. We'll get clarification.
We'll get clarification on that. But
all right, so we got calls.
All right, it's because we're probably in violation of the. The one that's not mentioned, which is the dirty laundry rule, so you have to be careful.
Section 37.5 C's.
There actually is, so be careful. Yeah, all right, 713-526-5738, Groove House?
Yes.
Who's up next by length of the holding?
By length of the holding, we shall speak to Ben.
Ben, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, guys, what's going on?
I don't know, man. What's going on with you?
It's a little intimidating now.
Why is that?
Coast to coast.
Coast to coast.
What's up with that? Hey, congratulations. That's really awesome.
Yeah, we think so too. Thanks.
Yeah, yeah.
We've
I've been to the Geek Gatherings a couple of times. You guys really, really do have a great gathering, and it's really fun. I appreciate you welcoming me a couple of times. And I just wanted to ask you guys, I'm a software developer. I'm in the industry, and so I'm pretty good with stuff, but... I have an iPad and an iPhone and all that, and I read the first book I had read in like 2 years probably, and I ended up wanting to get it on an e-reader, and I guess I don't have any books on e-readers, and I was looking at like getting a Kindle app for the iPad, and then I talked to a friend of mine who was like, oh, you can get a ton of books free, you know, or you can get them discounted, you use a public, you know, like an open source reader. I guess I kind of just wanted to get your guys', you guys, I'm sure, have a ton of books on e-readers and stuff like that, and just know your way around that landscape, and I really don't, so I would definitely appreciate your input.
Well, Dwight's the reader in the family, so we'll let him address that.
I do move my lips, though. But, you know, how are you interested in reading strictly books?
No, not at all. In fact, I'd love to read, like reports maybe given out by the government. I'd love to read, anything that's a PDF. The thing that did that last book I read was, The Big Short by Michael Lewis.
Right.
It was a book, you know, like bestseller. Whatever.
Are you interested in reading magazines on your, like, digital versions of magazines?
No, I do. Yes, let's just put it there. Yes, there. I know that there's the Newsstand app, right?
Right.
That Apple has.
Right.
You know, I'm familiar with some of the options. I just don't know. Like, is there a price differential? Like, are there features that I should be worried about?
Well, if you're using,
are there content issues? Like, are some of them not have bestsellers and stuff like that?
All of the bestsellers will be available on almost all the platforms.
Okay.
The you know, if you're using an iPad, it's a multi-purpose device. So, yeah, you can read on it and you can do a whole bunch of other things as well.
Yeah.
If you want something that's not that expensive, that is still tablet-like and is a primarily a reader, the Kindle Fire is a really good deal. There probably will be a new Kindle Fire coming shortly, so you may want to keep an eye out for that.
I think he already has an iPad, though, right?
If so, so you're looking specifically...
I have an iPad and an iPhone and all that, but I was talking to a guy. I hate to talk too much, but I was talking to a friend today, and he said the Kindle is really good. He's got an iPad, too, and he's like, it's so much lighter and, like, smaller.
Yes, I mean it's the Kindle in terms of the Kindle Fire, which is the, you know, the full tablet one. Yes, it's smaller, it's lighter, it's very comfortable to read in bed, which is where I do most of my reading. And if you're using a Kindle per se, the original Kindle with the electronic ink, that is probably, in terms of on your eyes, the most comfortable because it most approximates paper. It's very thin and very light. Amazon makes these interesting cases for those Kindles. There is a version of the Kindle that has a backlight now, but it has this, you can get this one that has a case where a light pulls up and curves over it and shines on it so you can read and, you know, your partner in bed, you know, can go to sleep. So there are benefits to kind of all of these different, devices. But if you're looking for something that is tablet-like, the Kindle Fire is a good one. And Barrett had in here the Nexus 7, which is Google's new tablet that has a Kindle app, and so you can read Kindle books on it.
Will Kindle app read the public domain books that are available?
Yes.
That would be a question. Like, I mean, I love talking about the hardware, but really, yeah, my iPad is fine for a while. I'll buy a Kindle Fire if the new one's coming out and it's cool. Mm-hmm. But I'm wondering, what are good sources for books? You know,
well, like Google Books. I mean, if I know that Google has a lot of the
public domain books.
Mm-hmm. You know, the stuff that's not copyrighted, like mm-hmm. you know, all your Moby Dicks mm-hmm. and things like that.
Yeah.
So you can find those books, and it's just a matter of finding them in the right format for the reader that you're going to use. And I know that the Apple iBooks has access to all those mm-hmm. free titles, mm-hmm. so you can pull them in mm-hmm. in this really nice format.
And I think iBooks works with the EPUB format, doesn't it?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
Whereas the Kindle will not. But again, you know, if you have an iPad, you know, you just, and the Kindle app doesn't work with it, you know, the iBooks app will, and there are other free apps that you can install that would do the same. So you kind of have... you know, a tool right now that will let you read almost anything. And I think is there a Google Books app for the iPad yet?
I believe there is, because I think I I installed it, but I haven't used it.
Okay.
Yeah.
And if you do a search for free ebook sites, there's all kinds of lists from places that, you know, in my just kind of quick glancing at it on Google, there's a number of them that are they're legit. The lists that I'm seeing are not, you know,
Google Play Books. It's an Android app, so there is a Google Books app, and it will
for Android. Yeah,
for Android, and so that would give you that will for sure give you access to all the Google book titles.
There's
tons of free stuff out there. My wife has she uses iBooks on her iPad and has downloaded several dozen books.
And if you check at your local library, a lot of libraries have where you can check out electronic books.
Yes, that's true. Yeah. You can actually check out a digital version of the book, of a commercial book, like that you would have, you know, a bestseller or something that's new.
That's what I saw, man. That's awesome. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So, talk to your local librarian. They're good on that stuff.
Cool.
And a lot of people don't know, and so there may be, you know, if you're lucky, then you may be able to get access to a lot of books that you'd have to wait longer for a hard copy.
Right. Oh, yeah. True. Is Amazon Prime a good deal? I mean, I hate to ask you about a specific product, but it looked like you could get a book for like a month, and then you get like one book a month or something for free if you're an Amazon Prime person. Do you know anything about that?
I am not familiar with that aspect of Amazon Prime. Amazon Prime, you know, is kind of the you pay one amount for the year, and and then you get free shipping, and you can stream some free movies on from Amazon.
They've added a lot of free movies.
Yeah, but I am not familiar with the book side of it.
Okay. Well, that's great info, guys. Thanks a lot. I'll definitely chew on that, and I'll see you at the Geek Gathering with my iPad and whatever.
All right, awesome. Thanks for your call.
Yeah, thank you, guys. Bye-bye. Bye.
Yeah, I've done some magazines because I've used it for flying, but I've not yet gotten I just haven't, frankly, part of the problem is I haven't bought a book in a while.
I haven't bought a book in a long time. I'm sure that I hadn't thought about it, but I'm sure that there are probably ways to get, you know, pirated books. Just like pirated music.
But not that you would do that.
I wouldn't.
There probably is. You know, there's a lot of, well, some of it even not pirated. If you do a search, I've seen it when it comes up on some searches you do. There's a lot. You get excerpts from books come up. You know, like Google has a lot.
Is there such
a
thing as a digital lending library? I mean, if I have a book, if I bought a book from Amazon, can I give that book to someone else?
I think the Kindle thing has where you can lend a book to somebody, and for a certain period of time, they have it and you can't read it or something like that, and then it reverts back to you. Hmm. I believe, you know, you can only do it. There's a lot of limitations, obviously, because if you take a really lax approach to it, then a lot of the you could just say that, no, I'm not pirating music. We're just all lending our music to each other over the entire internet, over LimeWire or whatever. So they tighten it down pretty good, and it's only for a certain period of time, and then it disappears off of their machine, and it's back on your list. They still haven't quite worked that one out, I don't think, but yeah, now it's been so long since I've really read a book that I've got a bunch of books that I read a long time ago
that I
could reread now because it'd be almost like reading them for the first time, which is just kind of sad.
It's kind of like that for movies for me right now.
Yeah.
Like, have I seen this one? And it takes me all the way to the end. Oh, yeah. I've done that. It was sitcoms and from drama series from like last season. I was watching the season premiere of Breaking Bad, you know, a few weeks ago, and struggling to remember what was happening.
Yeah, there were references to things that
that I missed or could not immediately recall.
Right.
And like the guy. Well, I'm not going to spoil anything. The guy in the hospital.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I said, they mentioned him, but when they finally went to go see him, I remembered who he was. But it's like when they referenced it and they mentioned it, it's like, oh man, okay, I got to go to the Breaking Bad wiki and see who this guy is.
Right. I bought the last season on Amazon, so I actually have it. And I went back and looked at kind of certain episodes where I thought, and that was very useful. Yeah, it was very useful.
But, you know, not technology. Well, actually buying that via iTunes.
Yeah.
And you did say wiki, mm-hmm. So there's that.
Yeah.
Thing I
did say wiki. I like Breaking Bad. What I like about Breaking Bad and growing old and senile is that I'll be a bit, you know, there'll be a period of time where I could actually start over at season one, episode one, and enjoy, I could see enjoying that show again. It's that good, and my memory is that bad that I could rediscover the whole series.
Weird Al tweeted that he likes to imagine that it's just the leading up stuff to Malcolm in the Middle. That it's just what happened before Malcolm in the Middle.
Well, you know, once you finally get past that, the Cranston guy becomes, you know, definitely not Malcolm in the Middle. It took me a whole season and a half to get past the waiting for Malcolm to show up. But now it's like, this is the role that guy was made for. He does a good job. And as you start to see him in other works, too, it's really fleshing out
it's funny to see him in old Seinfeld episodes.
He
was the dentist, Dr. Whatley.
Oh, he was. Yes, indeed. All right. Well, let's take a call.
Okay.
Who's up next?
All right. Up next, we are going to take Paul.
Paul, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hi, guys. How are you doing?
Good.
Well, I was calling because I was trying to figure out a way to send an email after a process is done, like scan a hard drive or, defrag a hard disk, which takes a really long time. But what I was trying to do is, you know, after that process is done, send me an email.
Oh, you want it to defrag the hard drive and then email you when that process is complete?
Yeah, I mean, I really don't care at the moment, you know, to send me the results. I just want to know that, hey, this is done. Go and check on the machine kind of thing.
Is this on Windows or?
Windows and, if possible, on Linux. I mean, I'm trying to do them both.
Paul calls in every week with something else.
I mean, if I can do it one and not the other, that's fine, too.
Because, I mean, basically, there's shell scripting. I did a quick search on, basically, you want to look up scripting. And, you know, obviously it's different from Linux to Windows, but there's, like, PowerShell, it looks like, for Windows, which will let you do, you know, write scripts to make it do whatever tasks. That gets into, I don't know if you save enough time to learn all the scripting stuff.
A lot of what people tend to do in this kind of situation is set up a scheduled event to have something like a check disk or a scan disk or defrag run overnight, you know, or after hours when you're not using
it. Yeah, so it starts at 2 in the morning and kind of like a cron job on a server.
Right. Because I've never used anything to, you know, in my whole IT experience, never had any need to, like, know when it was done. I mean, I could kind of see a benefit to that, but it's been more beneficial to set up cron jobs and so forth so things, regular maintenance takes place in off hours and it's just done when you come in the morning.
Yeah. And, well, I was having one more question. It's the wake on LAN, you know, for the computers. Mm-hmm. Is there any good over other features? Over other services?
Other than, well, I mean, I don't understand the question. You wake on LAN, are you asking if that's a good?
No, I'm trying to, you know, sometimes I forget a file on my computer at work. So what I want to do is turn the computer at work, and then so I can access it and transfer that file and then shut it off. But I have been looking at several services, but I don't know. Some seem like not very trustworthy. Others require a lot of configuration, you know, like dynamic DNS and all that stuff. And I'm trying to, you know, keep it simple.
Well, I still don't really understand what so you want to be able to connect to a computer at the office that you've turned off.
Yes.
And access a file.
Yeah.
So wake on LAN will do that, but ideally in a work network situation, you have everything on a domain so that when the computer wakes up, it gets an IP address. You know, basically you can ping it by host name. But yeah, why not just leave the computer on?
Well, sometimes the computer, they shut off because of power surges or thunderstorms. So, or just, you know, it happened that it had an update.
Well, you'd have to have it on a static IP address, and you'd have to have, this is a fairly complex route networking issue. I don't know that we're going to be able to resolve on the air for you. I would say there's not an easy solution for this for you, but if you want to have a conversation about it offline, and we'll see what we can do to help you out with that. All right, 713-526-5738 is the number to call if you want to be on the air with us tonight. My computer at my office, I have to connect to it remotely, like using remote desktop and so forth, because all of my apps and my tools are loaded on there, and it's helpful if I need to work from home because I'm waiting, you know, that four-hour window for the Comcast guy to show up or whatever. Being able to remote into my computer at work is a nice thing to have. I leave my PC on. It goes into standby mode. It's there when I need it. And, of course, like you mentioned, the caller mentioned, if the power goes out, stays out long enough, my UPS dies, then the computer's just off.
Yeah, it's a tough one. You want to have it available like that all the time. You really have to plan ahead for it. So the idea that, you know, oh, hey, wait, I want to go back home and get my stuff remotely, unless it's just set up and ready for that, I don't think there's any easy. I mean, there used to, back in the day, I had a server that was kind of wonky that was hosted at this place. It was in a closet at a business that had like extra internet bandwidth, and so it was a cheap way to have a server on the internet. And the server was an Apple server back before OS X, and so it would get overloaded and it'd freeze. And there actually was a thing where you could call. It was hooked up like a modem where you could call it, and it would force the power to cycle.
Right. So, but I'm thinking if you want to have a PC that's going to go to sleep, or you're going to turn it off, and you want to wake it on LAN, first of all, you'd have to have a static IP address assigned to it.
Yeah, or like you said, all that dynamic DNS stuff that you have to set up. It just, most things that are that super convenient and easy are expensive to get it super convenient and easy. And so right. if you don't have the money to get the software that'll just do it for you, then you're going to be spending a lot of time and you're going to be doing a lot of gymnastics to make it work.
All right, 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with us. Who's up next?
All right, up next we're going to take Ed.
Ed, you have a question for Dwight, apparently.
Yeah, I was following his Twitter feed and was kind of curious. It looked like in installing Mountain Lion, Dwight, you ran into a couple of gotchas. I wondered if you might summarize those for us non-developer plain Joes who would be installing this, if there's any gotchas to look for.
Well, I'm not sure how common the gotchas I ran into were.
Because you're the only one you know that's had them.
Well, no, actually, that's not true. I did find some other folks in the Apple discussion forums who were having this, but it seemed to be somewhat isolated. What I had no problem installing it on my iMac. I have an older, in fact, I have the oldest iMac on which you can install Mountain Lion. So uh-huh. when the next one comes out.
Wow, that's like 2 years old.
Yes.
Isn't that sad? No, I know. It's just not
2007, that old actually.
Oh, well, that's
it's
not
late
too bad.
2007. So anyway, I was installed fine on that, and I went to install it on my 2009 MacBook Pro, and at first, I got these error messages that indicated that this file was damaged and couldn't be verified and that I should re-download it. Well, this is a 4.3 gigabyte file.
Right.
And it took me a while to do it. So I did it like two more times before I finally started looking around for help. And what I found was that people were having success if they went into the, did a get info on the file after they downloaded it and changed the permissions so that each permission type could read and write to that file. And so once I did that, it installed just fine and there was no other problem. But I found this on the Apple discussion forum where people were having this issue.
Backing up a little bit though, if your machine is pretty much, you know, if it's on the list of ones that can do the upgrade and you haven't changed it, you haven't like put in a new hard drive or changed it substantially and you're, if you've gone through a upgrade before and all that, it's likely, that's highly likely that it's just going to work.
In the situation with this particular one, this notebook computer has, when I, you know, I originally had a 2005 black MacBook. When I upgraded to this machine, I did a migration and brought everything over. And I had gone through a couple of upgrades on the operating system on the black MacBook and then have gone through two upgrades on this. So, you know, I had a lot of I have a lot of legacy stuff on here. And, and in the discussion forums, it seemed to be that if at some point you had Tiger as part of the original operating system, that's when this kicked off.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, what I probably should do is bite the bullet and do a clean install on this machine because it's I've had other weird issues like that I think have to do with legacy. You know, if you have a relatively new machine, you've only, say, gone from Leopard or Lion or Snow Leopard or Lion to this, you probably won't have any issues.
Although the key thing to say is, if you haven't already, get an external hard drive, hook it up, set it up for Time Machine,
yes,
and run a Time Machine backup before you do the the update. It's you know, for $100 you can go get an external hard drive that'll work. And this is just to everybody out there. For $100 you can get an external hard drive that'll work. That'll save your bacon if you delete the wrong document or if your system update doesn't go as planned.
Right, right. Okay, great. Well, I appreciate the advice. Thank you very much.
All right, thanks for your call.
All right, bye.
Yeah, it's at least on the machines I've done it on, it just they don't have a lot of legacy, and although I don't know if the one goes back to Tiger, I don't think it does. It was as simple as the usual, like every other week software update kind of situation. I mean, obviously it took a little longer.
With Mountain Lion, what's the option for doing a clean install? Do you have to make, do they have tools for making a bootable USB? Or?
There is. There's actually, I was looking for this because I've been pondering it. There is an application called, I just had it up here. Where are you? Here it is.
The one that makes the bootable.
Yes, yes. Thing. It's called Come Hither.
It is. It's like Lion or Mountain Lion Builder or something like that. It's on the tech blog, as a matter of fact.
Yes. Yeah. 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 Mountain Lion Disk Builder or something like that, and it is. It essentially, you just, yeah, the thing you have to do is when you install Mountain Lion, the installer goes away. Yeah. So you want to make a copy of the installer before you run it. Put it in another location because you'll want to have that. You run this program, and you can either make a bootable flash drive or a bootable DVD, and you can then do a clean install with it. And I think I'm going to have to bite the bullet and do that.
That's what I. That's what I did. Is I went and I was pleasantly surprised when I went to the store that a 16 gig flash thumb drive from a brand that I trust was like $11.
Yeah, they're incredibly cheap.
So went and got that, and basically when the download finished and it says, "Do you, you know, click here to install Mountain Lion?" I put the thumb drive in, ran the Mountain Lion builder, and generated that flash drive to be ready for me to use in the future, and then I ran it.
I might have a simpler solution. Just get a new MacBook.
Yes!
There you go.
I mean, they should be shipping from Apple with Mountain Lion already installed, right?
Yeah.
I think that
and I would think a lot of people may be having this situation. I would love to have an excuse to, you know, like, want to get a Retina MacBook or whatever. Stuff I've got works.
I know.
It's fast enough. I'm not sitting there, you know, yelling at the screen or having the endless beach ball or any of that kind of stuff.
I'm waiting for the one piece of hardware to come. Right now, it's not compelling enough. I really, if I'm going to refresh, I have to refresh my desktop and my laptop. So I'm waiting for the laptop to come out to be powerful enough to be a desktop replacement.
The only tempting one to me would be to build a Hackintosh, like a power, you know, big like quad processor, trying to knock off the big Mac Pro thing, because basically to match like the $7,500 crazy one.
Yeah.
That, you know, who has the money for the $7,500 just for the
crazy
base unit? But that's like $1,800. If you build your own,
you kind of go,
okay, now I could swing $1,800 for one that is practically the $7,500 one.
The application that we're talking about is called Lion Diskmaker App.
There you go.
Lion Diskmaker App.
And it just automates. Basically, it handles all the, instead of you having to go in and initialize the flash drive with the right disk tools and all that fun stuff, it just does it and copies the files and says, "I'm done," and renames the flash drive, you know, whatever line installer, and you're done, which is pretty nice. I must say it's like Donateware. So if you use that, throw a few bucks to the guy.
Throw a fan at him.
PayPal account.
All right, 713-526-5738. We're talking about computers and technology and stuff. All right, Groovehouse?
Yes.
Who's up next?
All right, up next, we're going to talk to Daniel.
Daniel, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hi, thanks for taking me. I have a SharePoint site at work. I'm trying to know if it's possible to put an Access database on that.
Ask that question one more time.
I have a SharePoint website at work, and I'm trying to see if it's possible to upload an access database on that to display, I should say.
Wow, SharePoint. Okay, so I know we have SharePoint at my office. I don't work in SharePoint very much, but I would assume that it has the ability to tie into, I know you can share all of your other office-based documents, Word, Excel, mm-hmm. all that, make them where people can check them out. But what's the, when you say you want to share the database, I mean, is this something you want people to have the actual database, or do you want to have some kind of, I mean, what does, SharePoint uses a database. Does it use Access? Or does it use MySQL?
Well, that's a good question. It's not that they don't talk in real people terms. They talk.
Why don't you talk in real people terms about what it is that you want to ultimately do? What is what is the functionality that you're looking for?
I want you to be able to go to the web page and access some stuff from the database. I've been doing it fine with Excel, but they want to use a Access database.
So you want people to be able to log into the SharePoint site and have it query a specific Access database?
Yes, sir.
Do you want them, is this where they need to search it, where they're like looking up, you know, I don't know, things where the name is Bob or...
Right.
Kind of thing? It looks like, I mean, doing just a quick search, it says you can connect, you know, a database as a data source, including SQL Server, Oracle, or... that kind of stuff, but...
So if we said yes, what would your next question be?
Oh, that's it, bud. I mean, if I can do that, I'm all happy. I'll just keep looking until I find the... You know, they have this computer-based training, and it doesn't just jump right out at you.
Because
database programming of any kind is not a simple task. It's not something you go, you know.
Hey, I'll just hook up a database.
My website, and I'll make it usable for all of my users. I mean, it takes like an understanding of how. And I don't claim to be a database admin. I'm not a database admin at all. But I know that the people who do it have a lot of time and effort spent in learning how to do it. And then there's a conversation about what the functionality is going to be, what actually has to happen when people log in. So I don't know necessarily that SharePoint and Access is going to be the solution for what you're trying to do, but there's a possibility that it would be. I know that we have we use SharePoint at my office to be able to give people access to folders and I have very limited understanding of SharePoint, but I know that we give them access to specific documents that might be tied to a specific team. We can give people rights and permissions to upload data and put information onto the site. I suspect the whole thing is tied into a database of some kind.
It's going to be like .NET is going to be, you know, you're going to be writing stuff in .NET and you have to configure SharePoint to talk to your database, which it may be that it needs to be SQL Server.
Somebody just sent me a link
on Access database to the SQL database.
Somebody sent me a link on IRC to a Microsoft document, Introduction to Integrating Data Between Access and a SharePoint Site. You can share and manage data in many ways by using Office Access 2007 with Windows SharePoint Services 3.0. Google search Introduction to Integrating Data Between Access and SharePoint and a SharePoint Site. And
you are opening up into a world of serious development.
Hiring somebody to say this is what we wanted.
Writing up the SQL queries and, you know, making it display correctly and iterating through the results. You know, doing the you know, if you're getting multiple results, doing pagination for the results you get back. All those kinds of.
I'm going to sleep right now.
Could you say that Google search?
I would say, look, there's an office.microsoft.com, but if I or just go to Google mm-hmm. and search Introduction to Integrating Data Between Access and a SharePoint Site.
Okay, excellent. Thanks so much, guys.
All right, good luck. Thanks for your call.
Peace.
Oh, man, just talking about database stuff gives me the yawns, man. I know a few database programmers. They're not the most exciting people in the world.
They're
very good at what they do, but you have to...
Well, when that's all you do, when you're a DBA, when that's your life is just the database, you know, I run databases and I do stuff with them and write code that accesses them, but I don't, I couldn't do the just database day in and day out.
And then when databases go bad, they really go bad.
Yeah.
Start talking about taking data from one database and trying to map it into another database. I'm giving myself a headache just talking about this. Why am I talking about this? Groovehouse, yes. Help me.
Hey, let's take another call.
His headache.
713-526-KPFT. We have room for more callers.
Yes, we do.
And up next, we're going to talk to Wayne.
Wayne, you're on the air on Technology Bites. Hey.
Is AT&T the only landline that's available
for just telephone? That's the only. I mean, you use the term landline. Yes, they're the only.
Those are special wires that are only for phones that go to your house that you hook your phone up to.
Well, there used to be quite a few alternative, but they were primarily for businesses. And there may still be out there, but for
voice,
for residential voice, right. I don't think there is
over Twisted Pair. But now, if you want to do residential voice, you can do it through Comcast or Vonage,
right?
Over IP,
right?
Yeah, my mom's pays, or I pay $34 a month for a telephone to sit there. I was just thinking, yeah, maybe you guys might have a better.
I took my phone. I don't know how much she uses her phone, but I took my phone all the way down to the most basic plan, which gives me a few phone calls a month, and it's like under $30. It's like it might even be under $20 for the basic phone plan. But I don't think you can beat it price wise with any other service.
I think the only way you could beat the price is with like a cell phone where you buy minutes, if it's a place that doesn't expire them much, because if you're not talking on the phone much.
Well, that's what Cynthia does with her cell phone. She just bought one of those cheap old cell phones, and she'd put like 30 minutes on it or an hour's worth of minutes on it. And unfortunately, when you buy them at first, they will expire after like 90 days. So you have to keep going and reloading the phone. But now they'll last for a whole year.
Yeah, I use actually a track phone. I did the math, and it's $7.30 a month.
Hers is like $3 a month for her phone because it she just never uses it. But I want her to have a cell phone so I can reach her, or right. She can reach me. You know, to tell her I won the lottery and I'm out of here, or whatever. But yeah, so that might, you know, the only problem with that is, and I don't know what your situation is, but. My wife has a hard time remembering to keep her phone charged.
Yeah, when you don't
use it. She uses it so little. That's why I want the iPad to have a phone in it. She's always got her iPad on.
I can just make her have Skype on there. It'll do.
She has not enabled the data plan on it yet, so it's only when she's within Wi-Fi that she's using data. So I'm slowly getting her to come along. But if it had a cellular phone plan on it, she would pay for the data at that point.
But that's like $15 a month.
Yeah, but she's going
to... Compared to her seven or whatever, three that she pays.
Drag her kicking and screaming into the 20th century.
She could double-side Velcro the phone to the iPad.
There you go.
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
Crochet it.
But yeah, in terms of a home phone situation, I know with the... I'm seriously thinking about getting rid of my landline, and the step to do that for me is going to be converting my security system over to they have a cellular system where they'll put in, actually dial out on the cellular network to call out for your problems if somebody's breaking into your house.
All right, and my neighbor's moving, so what's cheap internet now?
Cheap internet. There is no, I mean, the basic DSL from AT&T.
About $25.
Or even maybe less. They might even have a promo going. We're going to, you know, it's pretty cheap.
Yes.
Yeah, I've seen the AT&T one work for $15 a month.
Yeah, you sometimes have to kind of work to get them to actually give you that rate.
There's also a discounted Comcast.
Yeah, Comcast has a very basic service. I don't know how much it runs, but like Peter said, if you, you know, beg and plead, they might, you know, they'll let you know. And
if you invest the time and,
that's right.
and look like you can't.
Somebody's probably written
else.
About it. If you say cheapest DSL or cheapest Comcast Houston, somebody probably.
Give them a good sob story.
It changes all the time, though. And it depends. The other thing is to watch for is if you get one of those really good deals that are a promotional deal. You know, ask them what it's going to be like when the promotion ends.
Right. I've kind of found that when the promotion ends, you just tell them that you want it to continue or you'll walk. And 99% of the time, they'll just continue it.
Well, both AT&T and Comcast, it's not a promotion. They offer a low-end plan.
Yeah, that's always plan. Cheap. They were forced to, I believe.
Yeah.
So they can't.
Yeah, I'm missing a neighbor.
Let's hope a new neighbor moves in soon.
Yeah. Okay. Well, great, guys. And hang in there for the fun drive, because I know that's got to be brutal on you guys.
Yeah, it is.
Except that's for the food. Kidding.
All right. Take thanks care. For the call.
When we can get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Right. Groove how, I mean, Barrett sent a video of the Goon Badge. I'm not sure if their hardware badge, he's got a looks like a DEFCON 20 Goon badge, and it's got electronics on it, so I don't know if they're going to be, I don't think they're going to be hardware badges this year, but he posted a video, but he put no explanation. I hate that. Tell me what that is! Because he's not the kind of person who responds in real time in social media either. All right, Groove House?
Yes.
Who's up next?
All right, up next we're going to take Marcus.
Marcus, you're on the air.
Hey, everybody.
Hey.
All right. My question has to do with switching from, what's it, snow leopard to mountain lion.
Okay.
Okay. First of all, I never did the upgrade for memory. It was like $100 you get an upgrade in memory. And I'm not a big computer person. From what I understand, it's like opening up a highway between two points. Points being your CPU and your fingertips. Anyway, if I install this mountain lion program, is my computer going to sprout legs and turn into a Decepticon on me?
I don't think so. All right, Groove House.
Yes.
Who's up next?
All right, up next, we don't normally do this, but we're going to take a call from Stacy, who has a suggestion on the
database?
SharePoint database situation. So, Stacy, right. You're up.
Stacy, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Yeah, I wanted to comment on the previous caller's question about Access and SharePoint. You have a couple of options with SharePoint. You can link the tables from your Access database to SharePoint, but then everybody that uses it will need to have a copy of Access. Another option is to convert it to something called Access Services for SharePoint, and then they don't have to have a copy of Access on their system. And a real good book that I found is from Manning Publishers. It's called SharePoint 2010 Site Owner's Manual, and it's written by a Microsoft MVP, and it talks a lot about the out-of-the-box functionality that you can do with SharePoint without programming, and also explains in there how to set up a development system using the free download SharePoint Foundation. You can download it to your system, a 64-bit system, and mock up and systems or applications which you can then turn over to your site administrator.
Okay.
Well, sounds like you've been working in that, so thanks for the info.
You bet.
All right, thanks for calling. Bye-bye. All right. 713-526-5738. We've got about 7 or 8 minutes left in the show, so we probably get a couple more calls in. If you want to be on the air with Technology Bites, call 713-526-5738. Groove House?
Yes.
Who's up?
All right, up next. Once again, we don't normally do this, but we're going to take suggesting calls from Wolf regarding landlines.
All right.
Go ahead, Wolf.
Yes, sir. AT&T doesn't advertise this, but when you want to move and keep your landline, you can put it on night call forwarding to some other location, another handle. And you shut everything else down. You don't answer anything ever there again. It comes into whatever your new line that you access it into. It's like call forwarding.
Right.
And when you do that, you pick it up, or it deals with whatever the service is that you have at that point. So you no longer have a permanent fixture. It goes to wherever you address it to, just like any other call forwarding.
What's the benefit?
If you want to keep the number, and a lot of people do, it's very inexpensive.
But it's an inexpensive way to keep your existing number and still pay for two phone services.
Well, actually, I mean, it's like less than $10 a month normally.
Well, that's not, I don't think that's where the guy that was calling in or asking.
He was looking
about
for cheapness.
He was looking for a cheap phone, not like a cheap way to pay extra money to keep his old number.
All right. Well, if somebody wanted to do that. The second one is on 7-Eleven, which was my son's birthday, they were talking, you guys were talking about UPS life and how long they would last.
Right, depending on how much hardware you have hooked up to it and what
right.
it's rated for.
Now, the smartest thing you can do is figure out what's batteries in there, get an exact duplicate, or buy two of and parallel them.
All right, very helpful. Thank you so much for your call, I think.
That gets,
if
that
you get
gets
more
into
batteries,
maker territory, I'm guessing, to wire them up correctly in parallel to expand your UPS life stuff, because that's what it sounded like to me. You can't like to take two UPSs and put them in parallel. That's batteries in parallel, and
you run one UPS off the other.
What I do is you go and you go find somebody's your neighbor's Prius and you take the battery out of that. Not the car battery part. Mm-hmm. You know, the one that's like $8,000. Yeah, this is filed under
pounds.
Bad ideas. So you steal the big electric car battery out, and then you can have that. If it'll take a car 40 miles, then it'll take your system will work for a week, you know?
With a lot of the UPSs, you can actually buy a replacement battery. You know?
But it won't, but it's not like, you know, not like a laptop or like an old school laptop where you could take out the old used up battery and put in a charged replacement to
not on the fly. But I've had I had a great UPS that I loved, and it died. The battery wouldn't hold a charge anymore. Just ordered another battery, put it in there, and got another about 3 years out of it.
It's a fair part of the cost, though, right? So if you spent $100 on the UPS, then the
it's about
the
$30 bucks. It's about $30 for the battery.
That's not bad. I think it used to be worse when you put the battery in. Mm-hmm. It was two-thirds of the price or something, but.
We have one last call if we can get to it.
All right, go ahead.
All right, we're going to take Rick. You're on the air, Rick.
Rick, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Can I go ahead?
Yes,
go ahead.
Please.
Okay. I had open office. When I create a resume, that doesn't get attached to the employer when I send it. So is there any way that open office document can be changed into MS Word?
No, not easily. You can save it as a .doc. I think you can save it as a Word doc.
Turn your radio down.
You need to turn your radio down? All right, we need to hang up on you. Sorry about that. You did tell him, like, when he goes
on
the air.
Yeah.
All right,
yep.
Well, sorry. What are you going to do?
What are you going to do?
But, yes, if you open the document in OpenOffice, when you save it, there's an option to save it as. So open up the ODT file. And then save as, and it has a save as a Word 2007, Word 2010, or whatever.
Or another format that's open and doesn't allow changes. You know, you can save it as a PDF.
That's true, too. Save it as a PDF, and that's universal enough.
Yeah, that can be looked at with anything. They don't even have to have Word to do it.
In fact, in the new version of Office 2013, you can now bring in a PDF, edit it.
Really?
Yes, and save as a PDF.
Or
yes.
Like having a Mac.
In Office. Yep.
In Office. Wow. Is that like hurting somebody's feelings like Adobe?
I don't know.
Is there something?
I don't know.
I don't think it's kind of become.
Yeah, it's become pretty much a standard. And in the in the previous version, in Office 2010, you could save as a PDF.
Right. I love the fact that you can save as a PDF, but I always thought making it hard to
edit. Well, if it's locked, if it is a locked PDF, you cannot. Yeah, you have to have the password to be able to unlock it. But if it's a generic PDF, you can now edit it in the new version of Word.
Wow.
Adobe lightened up on that. Apple went real heavy where a lot of the stuff on OS X is PDF underneath all of it. Mm-hmm. And so Adobe got a lot less tight about PDF stuff and editing back around then.
All right. Well, You have been listening to Technology Bites, you lucky, lucky people. I am going to DEF CON. I'm going to hack and get hacked. I'm walking into the most hostile network ever imagined.
With only an iPad and a camera.
I may not live.
CNET had a really good item on how to safely survive DEF CON.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah, I ought to check that out.
All right, well, we'll see you next week for more Technology Bites. Geek Gathering is a week from Friday, so keep that on your calendar. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Dwight.
And he's
Groove House.
Yay!
Thanks to the ceaseless work of KPFT's engineers, we've been able to restore a much stronger signal for our regular broadcast channel at 90.1 FM and for our HD channels as well. However, we still need to lightning-proof our transmission chain by replacing our antenna, transmitter, and other equipment. Our Lightning Capital campaign is ongoing, and the $45,000 plus that so many have donated has given KPFT a decided head start towards the first phase of lightning proofing, which will include replacing our current antenna. Please consider making a special donation to the KPFT Lightning campaign to help us get over this challenge to our budget and keep free speech radio alive in Houston. Visit kpft.org to make a donation today. Again, that's kpft.org to lightning proof your community radio station. This is 90.1 Pacifica Radio, kpft.org, twitter.com/kpft, Facebook.